morning, everybody. It is Friday. Yay. Today is Friday, the 22nd, in case you need some reminding of what day it is. And I'm super excited for our inspiring show today, as I have the honor of interviewing some of the most fabulous women in the pharmacy industry. I have today with me the 2021 Women Pharmacists of the Year, Dr. Nicole Bookstaver, Dr. Sina Haynes, Dr. Dixie Laycock, and Dr. Bled Tonneau. And all four of them have made it to this episode of Coffee with Susie. I'm actually going to start out by asking each of you to briefly introduce yourselves to our listeners today. And I'm going to start with Dr. Haynes.
Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to be here and to be with my esteemed colleagues. My name is Sina Haynes, as Susie has mentioned, and I have the pleasure of serving as department chair for pharmacy practice at the University of Mississippi School of Pharmacy. And I've been here since 2016, but overall in the academy for over 20 years. Excited.
Dixie?
Hi, everybody. I am Dixie Laycock, and I actually graduated at the time, many of you don't remember this time, but before the PharmD came out. I am a graduate of University of Maryland in 1992. We had the pleasure of testing out the curriculum for the incoming PharmD class. So I kind of feel like I should get an honorary PharmD at some point. But my husband, Anil, and I have been independent pharmacy owners in the Catonsville, Maryland area for the past 23 years. So it's hard to believe how quickly time has flown by. But that's just a little bit about me.
Hey, my name is Nicole Bookstaver. I'm so honored to be here. I am a graduate of the University of South Carolina, so a Gamecock, and I have been at my current institution, Prisma Health, for a little over 11 and a half years. And here I serve as our ambulatory clinical pharmacy manager. So I have a group of pharmacists that are out in ambulatory practice working alongside interdisciplinary teams to provide mostly chronic care to patients. I also serve as residency program director for our PGY1 program focused in AM care. And then I am also married to a wonderful man, Brandon, who's also a pharmacist. And we have two kiddos, Aaron and Maddie, and they are 6 and a half and almost 4 respectively.
Wow. So are you all three of you married to pharmacists?
I am.
Wow. I am.
Amazing. Wow. All right. Vlad.
Oh, hi. My name is Vlad and I am from Oklahoma City. I graduated from the from OU College of Pharmacy in 2016. I studied as a community pharmacist. I have recently transitioned into inpatient, which is a totally different world. And you probably also know me as a founder of hashtag Big Says Not Working, which is a social media campaign to raise awareness about working conditions in community chain pharmacy. And so I'm really excited and honored to be here today.
Thank you. Thank you again. I'm super honored to have all of you here today. And I wanted to start out by asking each of you some initiatives that you're actually working on right now that might be relevant to any of our listeners that might want to hear a little bit more about what you're doing right now.
Happy to share a little bit. What I've been doing quite a bit over the last several years and growing much more excitedly is in the well-being and resilience space. And so even though I'm primarily an administrator in the department chair's role, I still teach in the university and engage. So on the academic side, on the research side, on the service side, and I've been able to join those together in my efforts for well-being and resilience. So I have the opportunity to teach our students, interact with our residents in regards to this at the unit level of our department, engage at the school level and at the university level and with our alumni. So thinking about all of our stakeholders and designing and implementing programs and strategies strategically in order to move the needle in the right direction that we very much need even pre-pandemic. This certainly burnout and thinking about one's well-being as the triple aim has been ever present. I think it's more important ever now. And so thinking about what we have a responsibility to be doing as an individual, and then I think about the we, which is, I think about for me, my level of the unit, but then broadly in us. So we can take that in many directions. So cross to our institution, for us in professional organizations and our profession at large. So that's where my passion has been, and I'm excited to be part of the movement for us as a profession.
Thank you.
Susie, I've been excited about recently I became the managing network facilitator for CPSN Maryland, in addition to my other pharmacy things that I do. And it's been really exciting to see what other CPSN pharmacies around the country are doing. And we have picked up some just different initiatives going on. Obviously, with the COVID vaccines, we were receiving, you know, a lot of information, a lot of opportunities to be able to go out in the community to workplaces and give the vaccines to people who maybe wouldn't have gotten them, even, you know, doing it within our store, but also going out into the community, American Legions, workplaces, different. And that was through connections through CPSN. And now we're actually working with a company to identify patients that might be eligible for certain clinical trials to try to increase the diversity of medication clinical trials in the country. And Maryland happens to be one of the sites that they are working with. So it's been exciting to be part of that. And I think with a lot of the initiatives that we've been given, you know, the opportunities we've been given through COVID and the expansion of some of our scope of practice in certain areas, that we can use that to hopefully continue, you know, expand our services, expand on point of care, and do more with that. The other thing, I'm also the founder of Pharmacy Ethics Education and Resources, and my board and I are really trying to, with the struggles in community pharmacy to make a profit and to break even, let alone make a profit. I just started getting concerned a few years ago that we were going to start to see more ethical decisions being made, not necessarily on the right side. When you start to get to the point where you have to make choices as to whether your pharmacy is going to stay open or not, and maybe, you know, some people may not make choices they normally would. So trying to increase that conversation in pharmacy ethics. And I think the workforce issues that Sina brought up plays a good part in that, you know, resiliency, and just for us to have a platform to talk about it without repercussions, without fearing that we're going to have something happen to us for actually having the conversation. So.
Thank you.
Awesome. So in my world, I am mainly and passionately focused on expanding the footprint of pharmacists in the ambulatory space. And so I take great pride in developing relationships, of course, I love my pharmacy folks, but even broader than that, interdisciplinarily. So with physician colleagues, nursing, our compliance and regulatory department, as it relates to potentially billing for services, and across the gamut. So we, even through the pandemic, have been proud to the folks, you know, boots on the ground, the pharmacists in the clinics are the ones, you know, developing the relationships. And then I'm proud to kind of support and advocate and reinforce what they're doing from a quality standpoint, a patient care standpoint. Those pharmacists are doing, again, a lot of chronic condition management, anticoagulation, diabetes, hypertension, preventative health maintenance, but then also being, you know, clinical support to practices and really viewed as an integral care member as it relates to medication access, especially helping our under and unfunded patient populations. And so just really excited to be continuing to work in that space and grow the number of pharmacists that we have practicing in the ambulatory area. I think there's a big spotlight on this too now, as there's a lot of focus on quality, population health, and really transitioning from fee-for-service to value-based care. So as it relates to medication adherence, transitions of care, and really I kind of see myself as a little bridge between the ambulatory and inpatient worlds of pharmacy, and then to, again, between those other disciplines. So a lot of dynamic work that's been fun and exciting.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think also my current focus is very much aligned with CNI indexes regarding resilience and well-being in pharmacy, which has been a focus of Big Sales Not Working, is to really raise the concern that pharmacists really and student and technician are not really doing well and how that is really impacting patient care. But also really, one thing that you said that was interesting was giving the platform to having those discussions and to brainstorm solution without really feeling the fear of retaliation and intimidation from employers. And so right now, the main focus of the campaign, as we move, we're still talking about mental health and well-being in pharmacy, but also how to bring regulations that will protect pharmacists' voice and that will also create a culture where advocating for pharmacy is not a punishable offense, which has been why we've seen a lot lately in the world of pharmacy, especially in community pharmacy.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies. I know you're all so busy doing such great things. And I'm actually going to just dive into a little bit more, but I wanted to start out by asking, telling a story, I think, first, and then asking another question. But going back to burnout and the resilience of the pharmacist, I think for me, one story that I heard once really stuck with me, and it was of a pharmacist. She sent me a private message and she said, you know, I had a miscarriage yesterday while I was at work. I was in the pharmacy and I was hiding between the two bays, and I sat down and I just sat there and I texted the supervisor, but there was no one to cover and I knew I couldn't leave the pharmacy. So the technicians handled the register and I just sat there and I cried, and I cried for a good 4 hours of my shift until I was able to leave and change my clothes. And you know, I don't want you to share this with anyone else. You know, this is private, but please, you know, remember me and remember my story. And so I will never share her name, won't share the company, none of that, but really her story stuck with me. And I want to ask Sina, kind of, what was that aha moment for you? And maybe I'll even address this to Bled as well, where you said, you know what, pharmacists need this, that they're, you know, they are burned out and that this is happening all over, and you know, we need to offer them more support, or this is something that I can do to offer them.
I think there's probably many aha moments we've all had in our own testimony and walk in our profession and the various ways that we can practice those settings. And there are different nuances and challenges in those settings, whether it relates to the aspects of difference, but yet unity around challenges with workflow, right? It's different in a health system. It's different in an outpatient setting. It's different in a community setting, but challenges are present in all areas. And so when we think about manpower, technician support in all settings, workflow, payment models, restrictions, challenges on inter-dynamics between our consumers, our customers, and the interface with the clinical pharmacist, scope of work. There's so many aspects that I think rise up as unique or common threaded challenges that we have all faced. And I think that there's an attention to it, but I think we still have work to do in terms of our intention, thinking about some of those structural organizational shifts and commitment to aspects that hit to three common dimensions that we think about in professional fulfillment, obviously equal for personal fulfillment, and that's practice efficiencies, culture of wellness, and individual personal resilience. And this comes back to that, you know, that I, we, and us approach that I think is really needed in all areas, because I think there's some sensitivity now to the term resilience that the pandemic has brought forward. People are reacting to that terminology because they're suffering, and we all have been suffering together. We have a shared community in this. So I think now really is the time to seize and really have our intention around our attention, ATT, of what the current landscape and the environment is and how we can really be a catalyst of change.
Yeah, for me, when I hear the story, the first thing that comes into my mind is the aspect of culture. The moment that message had gone out, there should have been close the pharmacy down and go home. Not even the idea of waiting for someone to come and cover your shift, even if she had insisted in staying, you know, because at that moment, we need to be questioning what type of mental state she was, why, as she verifies auto prescription, what could have happened, you know, and we started have shown that how we feel mentally, emotionally, definitely impacting on patient care. And at that point, we really need to be thinking, what was the outcome of patient care for herself and for her technician when she didn't have the support, you know, to be able to go home during that time. And I've never had a miscarriage, so I don't really know the pain that goes with that, but I had people that who I know dear to me who had it, and I was present for one of them. And I can imagine staying in the pharmacy with my clothes in evidence of what is happening to me. And so we're talking a lot about what, you know, company cultures is so important for pharmacists, because not having the right support can cross over on how we feel about ourselves, but also how we take care of our patients. And so as we're discussing workplace issue and burnout, you know, one of my biggest struggle with some of the language is to offer solution for pharmacists for burnout, which I get it, but burnout is also related to the environment where we need to be thinking about how we can change the environment, not just telling pharmacists, here are more tools for you to get stronger, you know. And I think getting, we have a lot of resources that out there to help us mentally and emotionally, but that's not really enough, because in the sense what we're telling our colleague is that you're not resilient enough. So here's some more tools for you, but you know, we need to do one more step. Okay, we need to change the environment. I think that's all we're all fighting for. We're all fighting for a change of culture within employers.
I wanted to also bring up a topic because I wouldn't have known this until I opened up my own pharmacy, and I'm going to direct this question more to Dixie, but as an independent pharmacy owner, oftentimes you dispense a medication and you're not paid for the medication at all. You don't even get a penny. And sometimes you have to actually pay the insurance company, so to fill the medication. And I remember coming home, I'm not married to a pharmacist. So I came home and I told my husband, and he was like, what? You're giving out that medicine and you're paying to give it to somebody and you just bought it? He's like, what business model? How does that even, he couldn't even understand right. it. Yeah,
anybody that we explain it to just doesn't yeah. get it. Like, why would we do that?
Yeah. Like, why are you paying for someone's medication? Just what are you doing? So what advice, how do you stay afloat? You know, how do you do it? I mean, and how can we help? What can we do I remember I posted once, I had a screenshot just of all the negative reimbursement, and I must've had 20,000 views on that one post within the day, because it was everyone's mouth, I think, just fell to the floor. But yeah, you know, what can you say about that? Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're trying legislatively, obviously, both within our states and federally, to bring aware, you know, NCPA and APHA have been very, and even ASCAP have been very, ASHP have been very vocal about, you know, the system isn't working. You know, pharmacy dispensing is really working on a very broken, outdated system. And, you know, the people that are suffering are our patients, because there are times where there are certain drugs we just cannot stock because we can't get it at a rate that we can get reimbursed. And we can't afford to, you know, there are some cases, it's hundreds to thousands of dollars that we would be losing. And, you know, so my choice is, do I keep my pharmacy open and at least able to take care of the majority of my patients, or are there, you know, and that means there are certain patients I'm going to have to let go. And we try to look at the whole patient. Like, it's not just about losing money on one or two patients, but until this system of AWP minus and DIR fees, until this is all fixed, we're really going to have patients that keep getting turned away from certain pharmacies. And I do want to say, it's not just the independent community pharmacies. I've talked to a lot of my chain community colleagues, and they're suffering too. It's only a few of the larger companies that are winning in this scenario. So a lot of our smaller grocery store chains, our smaller regional chains, they're getting hit by the DIR fees too. So it's going to eventually get to the point where pharmacies aren't going to be able to fill certain things. And I don't ever envision a world where pharmacists aren't going to be dispensing at all. I don't see that. I think we're always going to have a role in that space, but we need to find other ways to bring in revenue into our pharmacies. So through work with CPSN, immunizations, point of care, contraceptive prescribing, all the things that we're trying to bring in. And then unfortunately, it means, I'm sure Blitz noticed that it means, payroll hours are cut. Yeah. For instance, the farm, how many times are you working without any technician help, and you're expected to do point of care and drive through and the phones? I mean, I've stood there and watched my friend, trying to talk to friends and watching them just do all of it. And mistakes are made because we can't do that many things. But I've even noticed the fact that a lot of the larger chain pharmacies are closing a lot of hours. The particular chain across the street from our pharmacy is now Monday through Friday, 9 to 6. And that's it. They're closed at nights and they're closed on weekends. So now all of a sudden, after 40 years in that spot, our hours are better than theirs, where that used to be one of the complaints, like, well, they're open longer hours. And now that's not the case. So it's going to really impact our patients, especially those in more underserved areas, because if they can't go to their pharmacy, then they're not going to be able to get that medication. And we've really got to figure this out. And I think mainly just, keep being involved in the initiatives that are already out there, being part of the voice. It can't just be, when it's the independent community pharmacists, like, oh, they're just worried about their bottom line. It's like, well, yeah, but I'm also worried about how our patients are going to be cared for and what's going to happen, because it's not just us.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're right. And I think we have to talk about it as a profession. And I think that we need to discuss it. And, we need a hashtag for this as well. So, we have to bring this up, and we need to say pharmacy and say it, as part of it. And I think we need to talk about it. Nicole, now I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the AmCare part as well, because I get questions about AmCare a lot. I'm really interested in working in a physician's office, but I don't know where to start. I don't know how to start. And I often direct people to, for example, finding a collaborative practice agreement and, a template or a draft. And that's a great place to start and then work through that. But then the reimbursement, and you've touched on that briefly, but the reimbursement comes up. Well, how am I going to make money? How am I going to get paid? What can I do for that? And what insight can you offer to anyone listening today?
Sure. So I think, well, first and foremost, our pharmacists do practice under collaborative practice agreements. So we have a formal document that our compliance and regulatory department has blessed as far as kind of what outlines our scope of practice that fits within our state's, Pharmacy Practice Act. I think the first key thing is really kind of having a conversation and discussing what's important to that office and what do patients there need. A lot of what drives our activities are quality metrics and the different things that we function in a large academic medical center, big, big system, but go from that to even, a smaller FQHC, you have kind of the whole gamut. What are they following from a quality standpoint? And then how can the pharmacist support that? And how does the pharmacist bring value to that patient's care? So for diabetes, for example, patient is still going to see their provider every 3 to 6 months. But then in between those office visits, the pharmacist is, a lot of times it's telephonic, calling the patient, getting blood sugar information. A lot of patients now have CGMs, so probably a lot of times downloading CGM data, talking about diet, lifestyle, really just kind of digging into what's going on with the patient. What are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish and get to? And then kind of, working in successive, you know, iterations with the patient. It might be every week that you call the patient or every 2 weeks. And then under the collaborative practice agreement, of course, we have the ability to titrate medications, perhaps recommend additional therapies that might be needed. And then by the time the patient goes back to see their provider, maybe in 6 months, we might be able to draw an A1C and see results. As compared to the provider, hope things are going well. Maybe there's access issues. Maybe patient has hit the donut hole and now can't afford their injectable diabetic medication that they've been on for the first part of the year, and they don't know where to go. So the pharmacist kind of individualizes the care for each patient and is kind of there for them, I guess, very specifically along the way to help expedite clinical outcomes. And again, I go back to the word relationship. And a lot of that is just building relationships with that care team, figuring out processes, using, you know, PDSA cycle, for example, to really kind of articulate what goal are you trying to do? How are we going to do it process-wise? And then to always harping on how are we going to measure that we've been successful.
No, that's great. Great advice.
Do you mind if I add one, Pete, something?
Yes, yeah.
I think I would just echo Nicole, totally spot on. And I think that depending on the site and the scope and the agreement that's in place, you know, if you think about some potential other opportunities that folks like Nicole are looking at, that might be annual wellness visits or comprehensive medication management. To her point about diabetes, I can remember even when I was still in ambulatory care practice, I was able to pursue becoming pump certified. And there was some revenue to the facility, to me as a provider at my facility, to get folks started on pumps and to be able to track them over the first few visits. And so, you know, sources of funding, grants or other opportunities, but I think she covered this really well. These would just be a couple other additional things that she's probably already doing.
Yeah, yeah, sure? That's great advice. Yeah. I also, I recommend too, sometimes to work, look at affluent areas where there are wellness centers, and wellness centers are always looking for pharmacists. I actually worked closely with a gynecologist, and she only did GYN. She didn't do OB, and all of her patients wanted to talk to me about their supplements and about preventative health and what they could do to prevent disease. And so, and they paid cash, they were paying $200 to speak to the pharmacist for the hour. So the numbers are there, and they will pay it. And you can also just be a cash only pharmacist if you're, you know, if you're interested as well. So I do like to throw that out. But going back to Women Pharmacists Day and Women Pharmacists of the Year, we received hundreds of nominations, and the committee actually came down and selected the four of you. And I didn't know if any of you knew you were nominated. Did you have a clue? Did you not have a clue? Were you surprised when you found out that you had won? Because let me tell you, it was very difficult to make the selection, and many of the committee members, it was just hard. We had so many great nominations, and you know, so I do want to congratulate all of you again for winning. But did you have any idea?
I have to start because it makes me laugh every time. It was my husband that saw it at first that I had been nominated. And I was like, why are you trolling the Pharmacist Moms Facebook group? Like, I don't even know why he saw that. Like, it doesn't show, I have to, you know, go in and look at it. It doesn't always pop up for me. And he was like, I don't know, it popped up and I saw your name. It's like, okay. And then we happened to be at NCPA when the announcement was made. So unfortunately I couldn't watch it, you know, I couldn't be on live, but then a lot of my LKS sisters did start trying. I could be on Facebook during the meeting. Don't tell anybody, but you know, a lot of my sisters were starting to chime in and congratulate me. So it really was a big surprise. It was a huge honor. And I have to say, it's the most beautiful award I've ever been given. So
yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Yeah. I did know about the nomination, and I was truly shocked and humbled and honored. And I'm amazed to see that I was even considered a finalist, to be honest. And then I was unable to attend the live announcement, but did watch it after. And part because I was getting a flurry of emails. So I thought, oh my goodness. So I did watch it. I was excited and had like goosebumps. And I'm really just, again, can't say enough how I'm honored to be part of this group and really our tribe of women pharmacists overall.
Yeah, I agree. I think I was on my way to work when I saw it in my email, and then I think I just screamed a little bit, and then I was like, oh my gosh, did you see that? And then just screenshot and sent to my boss, and I was just so wanting to talk about this. And so once again, it was funny. And actually, it came at a moment when I was having a lot of decision making with how I started because it's not working, and just going through the fact that things were not moving along fast enough for me. And I was just having a lot of that insight. So the nomination really came and boosted my energy in a lot of ways and made me feel really confident about the work that I wanted to do. So I do want to say thank you again, and truly really an honor. I still have the trophy. Every day I was like, this is mine.
I did know one of my team members had told me that she nominated me, which I was just so humbled and appreciative of. And then I lived at one of our I did live in like a trailer at our mass COVID vaccine site for 5 months. And I honestly had forgotten about it. And then I had received the email that I was a finalist again. I really didn't think it was possible, knowing that all the other amazing women that are out there. And being so brainwashed about phishing and fake email attempts, I didn't think it was real, and I deleted it.
Oh my gosh.
And then whoever was trying to really communicate sent the email again. I'm like, man, these guys are persistent. And I reported it as phishing. And then what's funny is that morning, Brandon, my husband, actually texted me, and one of the other nominees and finalists tweeted him to say, congrats to your wife. You know, it's awesome to be in a category with her. And so he texted me and said, what is going on? I think you're like perhaps going to win an award. And so it was really funny.
Oh my gosh.
Circular thing. But again, just, I don't love the spotlight. And I've said all along is that I can only do what I do as a pharmacist because of the awesome team that I have around me. First and foremost, my sweet husband and my kiddos, who gave me a lot of grace to be doing a lot of things related to COVID vaccines through more than half of 2021. I would leave our house before my kiddos got up and would get home usually close to 6 p.m. and would do that again Monday through Friday. But it was probably one of the most awesome professional projects I'll ever be a part of. And I don't think any of us would have like traded serving our community and our health system for the world to do that. But then also my team, you know, my team that's out, you know, building relationships and advocating for pharmacy and doing the work, they're doing it. And so again, like I share my little award, it's not mine. It's the group that's around me. So.
And before we wrap up, but I wanted to ask you, you know, about being a woman in pharmacy and what it means to you. And I think I go back to even just my own story as I worked at UIC College of Pharmacy, and the back hallway had all of these black and white graduation photos. And I would every year, you know, the college was very old, so over 100 years of photos, and seeing a lot of these black and white photos with just maybe one or two women per year. And then as you went down the hall, you would see more and more women and more and more women. And then I came to learn that for the past 40 years, women have graduated as the majority of graduates in pharmacy. And so, you know, I'm interested to just hear from each of you, what does being a woman in pharmacy mean?
I think I would completely echo your remark, because being in academia since I graduated, well, I entered pharmacy school in 96 after a previous discipline I was in. So I was a little older for my age group in pharmacy school, graduated in 2000. And when I think about the demographic, you know, in our doctoral programs, it's dominant to female even still. And so thinking about our graduates, the profession still being significant as it relates to the female demographic and the diversity that we've also have gotten to see over the years, which certainly needs to and can improve. I think the ability for me in this profession to be in academia and in clinical practice, to wear both hats and know that I've had a small piece in the lives of women who've pursued this profession, to share my wisdom and theirs to me, because I learned from our learners, from our residents, from my peers, from my patients, all of them, but to know that I've had a small opportunity to have an impact as they have on me over the 20 plus years, and I hope that continues for many more to come, has been truly, truly amazing. I'm honored to be in this profession, to have this small piece, to interact with females across settings and empower other women and pay it forward, because I consider that an obligation that we all have, is to raise the standard, empower women, break the glass ceiling that still exists in some ways, whether it's through promotion, salary, opportunity, you know, to use what we have in our station and place to help others advance.
I agree, Sina and Susie. It really is, women in pharmacy, it's been a big part of my pharmacy career, especially as past brand president of LKS, which sole mission is to promote women in pharmacy and pharmacy among the profession. So I really feel like that those generations of women that did come before us, and when nobody looks happy in those pictures, but especially not the women, but it had to have been really tough. And talking, you know, even to, you know, my sisters from the 50s and 60s, like what that generation was like, because, you know, they were only supposed to be teachers or nurses, all the way, you know, to my story, growing up doing a Girl Scout badge, and my mom kept saying, you need to be a pharmacist, you need to be a pharmacist. I'm like, Mom, we've never stepped into a pharmacy. Like, why would you want me to be a pharmacist? And she, you know, at the time she kept, would, you know, in the paper where they had these things called help wanted ads, you didn't have Indeed or ZipRecruiter. She said, I always see jobs for pharmacists. And I knew that you could, if you had to provide for a family by yourself, you could do that with that kind of profession. And it's something everybody is going to always need. So I've also wanted to be that example for other women, especially in independent pharmacy. I mean, yes, I own it with my husband, but it's a viable career for any woman, you know, to have a family and a pharmacy at the same time. Both my kids have worked, my nephews worked for us, both my kids have worked for us, everybody's worked at the pharmacy from a really young age. So it's truly become a family business. And by getting the kids involved, it's given them a different level of accomplishment that they want to reach for. So they also noticed when we owned the pharmacy, I was more available than when I worked for other people to attend family things. And that seems a little odd, but if it's my store, I just need to cover it. I don't have to take off the whole day and try to switch around everybody's schedule. So I think just being the example and, you know, bringing other people along with us is really what it means. It's what we do, mentorship and helping other women get what they want.
One of the other things I'm passionate about is mentorship and leadership. You know, as a residency program director, preceptor, and supervisor, you know, just, I guess, sharing insight. One of the things I talk about a lot is silos. And I think we often try to put work and life in silos, and really you can't, like they're always going to collide. So I am so proud, and I don't know, aside from, you know, like traveling the world or whatever, if to choose another profession, what would I choose if I had the chance to do it again? And I don't honestly think I would say anything other than pharmacy. Like, I'm so proud to be a pharmacist. But I think it's also important that we are proud to be what we are in life too. And for me, that's a mom and a wife. And for, you know, other folks, you know, that's other things. And so I really take pride and joy in being a role model to others. And that kind of, as time has gone on and my family dynamic has changed, I might pick and choose what I say yes to. My plate might have to shift and look a little bit different, but I try to be a good example and a role model that you can be a pharmacist and something else, you know, and do them both well and serve patients well.
Yeah, I remember reading through the resume of all the nominees for and women for us. So just thinking, I said, how do they do all this? Where do they find the time? And, you know, and I mean, compared to my mind fell completely flat, but I was just really so impressed with you guys and just in general. And the fact that this is true of women, you know, we take so much on our plate, you know, because we want to be that example, you know, even when we are not seen by the world, we're still in the shadow, still carrying our families, you know, and doing the best that we can. And so for me, just seeing myself once again to echo, I could not have seen myself doing anything as by pharmacy again. I think if I were to go back, I would still choose to be a pharmacist, but also just like you said, I am also very proud to be a mom and also to be a wife and to know that I have a family that supports me through all that I want to do. And I, for me, when I think about women in pharmacy, I want to think about solidarity and how we need to be present for each other, because, you know, yes, we are all women, but also we have different struggle even within that sector, you know, even as a woman of color, my struggle and my trials, you know, is very different from my other colleagues. So how do we have those hard conversation through the process? And not to say that my journey is harder, it's just different, right? And so, and to just really support each other. You know, someone made a comment to me that if you are in a working environment and you're all women, you should be able to take turn babysitting each other kids so you can have time. And so I think about the community that we can build together, right? And to be able to be pillars for each other, to be able to be mentors for each other, and to be able to bring values to each other, because there are so many hidden talents out there that we have yet to discover. And there's so much about be a woman that we still don't know yet, you know, and I hope that as we grow together, we are able to bring out that, you know, not just share our struggles, but also really share our victories. And one thing I love about Pharmacy Mom Group, that's really what it is. We all this bunch of crazy women that just get together and share each other's secrets, right? We mourn together, but also we also celebrate in so many ways. So I am very, very just honored and very, very proud to be a woman and to just not be also be a woman in pharmacy altogether.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, ladies. If somebody's looking to reach you, how can they find you? I would love for, you know, should they email you, LinkedIn? What's the best way to find you? If, you know, we're going to have listeners and they might have questions, where can they find you?
So folks would be welcome to email me, certainly at the university, at shaines, H-A-I-N-E-S, at umc.edu. But I'm also on YouTube. I have a yoga channel, Yoga Apothecary, if folks want to meet me on the mat and do some self-care practices. And on Instagram, you can find me also at yoga.apothecary, where I tried to put out some nutrition for the mind.
Love it.
I'll have to check that out. Probably the easiest for me is email Dixie at peer, P-E-E-R, then another rx.org. And I'm on Facebook too, because I think I'm the only, if it's Dixie White Laycock is the easiest way to find me on Facebook.
I would say email for me is easiest, nicole.bookstaver at prismahealth.org. I am on social media, but just dark and taking a break from it. So email.
So the good thing, or maybe the bad thing about running a social media campaign is because I am on social media. So you can find me on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Twitter. Just Google my name. Something will come up and I'll try to answer as early as I can. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Before we end the episode, though, I do ask every guest to share a photo of something that's important to them, and we would love to learn more about you. And I'm going to have each of you share a photo with our guests or with our listeners today. So, Sina, did you want to go ahead and start?
This is a photo of my husband and I, so Stuart Haynes, who is another pharmacist, and we met in pharmacy at a meeting, and, you know, romance happened, and we married and wedded, and we've been together, goodness, 15, 16 years. And I wanted to share this photo because he truly is my kindred spirit, and I don't think I'd be where I am today without his support, his collaboration. At times we have the pleasure of working together quite a bit. We're employed at the university together. And I'm just so thankful that he is in my part of my pit crew. Like, he's there to support me in all ways. And I reciprocate that with him. And so I'm just very grateful and wanted to share that. I would have shared a picture of our son too, Ian, but he's a little shy. And so I kept the picture to just Stuart, but we do have a son who's about to turn 20.
Well, my picture is of my husband and I in our pharmacy. One, I picked it because it's one of the best pictures we had ever taken together. I don't know what happened that day, but it turned out really well. So whenever somebody asks me for a picture of the two of us, that's my go-to. And, you know, I wouldn't have this journey without him. We've truly been through it together. We met on interview day 33 years ago, April 1st. I was actually the first to show up, which if you know me is a miracle because I'm always late. And he was the second to show up because he's always early. So we actually talked a little bit before, and then we sat behind each other in pharmacy school and struck up a friendship, and then started dating and got married right after we graduated. We have two beautiful sons. One's married and has a baby. So we are first time grandparents. And then, so Eric and Kiana are both work for us and live very close. So we're lucky. My younger son, Mark, is almost 24. He's down in Florida. So that's the reason I didn't do a family picture, because I need to have one with all of us, including Ember. And we haven't been able to, she's only 10 months old. So we haven't been able to coordinate that. Maybe for her birthday, we'll be able to do a full family picture. But, you know, the pharmacy really is where our life has, you know, what we've been able to do in our life is because of the resources from the pharmacy. And we've had a beautiful life together and been able to work really well together. And we're better for each other because of each other. And we've been able to provide for a lot of other families too. We truly are a family business.
So my picture is of my crew. It's one of our more recent weekend getaways. The day prior, we had driven up to Greensboro to see the Lady Gamecocks play in the Final Four. So we kind of use college sports to bop around the country. But then the next day, we decided to do a hike and enjoy nature. So that was us up at the top. Again, that's my husband, Brandon. And then our little guy, Aaron, who never stops talking, super energetic, just has something to say about everything. And he's as smart as a whip and he keeps us on our toes. And then Maddie, who is so crazy. God gives us same parents and two opposite children. Maddie, who's more timid, loves listening and is just more shy. But we just love traveling and enjoying nature together. So that's my little family.
So my picture is our recent family photos, my husband and my son and I. We don't really have all the pictures together, but I chose this one because for the last 2 years, you know, many of us are really much aware both my son, we've been going through a lot of medical issue, but I love that because he's gone into this very joyful little man. And partly because, you know, my husband has been the one who's been the pillar of a family during this time, and just really been present for us. And he quit his job and stopped school to stay home with my little one. His name is David Emmanuel. Most people know him as GJ Bubbles because he doesn't sleep at night. To just stay at home with him, and he's been the one teaching him how to roll, how to crawl, and how to do all the things that he needs to do. And so I am so really honored to have met him. We have known each other for about more than 16 years, and we're high school sweethearts. And so it's always, and we are really dumb and stupid together. And I think that's probably why he works. And so, but once again, I see he's, for me, he's a picture of what father looks like. You know, it's not so much about how much money you bring home, but really what the sacrifice that you have to make for your family when it's needed. And so I am very honored to be married to him.
Thank you so much, ladies, for sharing these personal stories and all of these stories with everyone. I'm sure everyone has learned something today, and I thank you again, and I would love to have you on in the future.
Thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Susie.